is 10/10/2020. And I just want to give a quick RIP to all the brides who had their wedding day today. Today was supposed to be their wedding day because so many people picked this date. It was like the most popular wedding day of the year.
Believable.
Bum city.
Yeah. This...
Hey, 2020, what's up?
Bummer.
Yeah. Ugh.
What a year it's been, man. Oh, man. Okay, so I'm in Missouri right now. I'm not in LA, and I wanted to tell you guys about my flight. So when I flew here, I, you know, took all the precautions. I have two masks on. I've got a face shield on. I made sure I selected a seat where no one was sitting next to me. When I checked in for my flight, I paid extra so I could move my seat if I needed to. When I checked in for my flight, there was no one in my row. There was no one in front of me, no one behind me. And I was like, sweet. Okay, I'm an island. Perfect. Mm-hmm. I don't know what happened in the 24 hours between when I checked in to when I left. But there were people sitting right next to me. There was a guy sitting right next to me
in the middle
plane,
seat.
In the middle seat on the plane. And I'm like, okay, you know, you're as protected as you can be. Just squish up against the window. Like it is what it is. You just got to like get there. First of all, we got off on a real bad foot because this motherfucker leans across me to open the window.
Absolutely, goddamn not.
Even in non-COVID times, that is inappropriate plane etiquette.
Absolutely.
That is my window, sir.
That's right.
I have the window seat.
That's right.
I have control over this whole side of the plane.
Also, use your big boy words and fucking ask.
You could ask and I would have opened it for you. You absolutely could have asked and I could open it for you. But like especially in these trying times, TM, for you to invade my personal space like that.
Ugh, I
appalling.
Just got chills.
Appalling.
I hate that.
But you know, I'm like chronically, so I was very visibly annoyed, right? Passive aggressive, didn't say anything, but I was very like
I
visibly
shut it.
Annoyed. I did think about it.
I would, because I don't fuck with that shit. Get off me.
But I was like, I'm going to be on this plane with this guy for like 4 hours, right? Like, you know, I'm going to have to sit next to this man for 4 hours. So I'm starting to think, because I'm like chronically, always think that I'm the problem. Was like, am I being rude? Am I overreacting? Like, am I being rude? So I was starting to like think that. About halfway through the flight, he gets up and needs to use the bathroom. So he stands up, and again, I don't know what this man's deal is about using words, because he isn't asking the woman on the end to like move so that he can get up to use the restroom. He's just indicating that he wants her to move, like kind of just like, you know, trying to like sidle by her. I'm like, let the woman get up. And when he stands up, when I tell you, I have never seen a hairier ass in my life. In my life. It was ass to face. Because he was.
Oh, no, girl.
Come
and
on.
It was.
Oh.
It was the most bizarre thing. Like, literally, it's burned into my memory. Because I've never seen anything like it. Like, you guys have to
assaulted.
I did. You guys have to tell me if you've ever seen anything like this, because like he had like low-rise jeans on, so like when he like leaned over to walk out, like they went down below the crack area. It's not like it was back hair. Like, it's not like it was like lower back hair. It was like the majority of it was in the crack.
No.
Like curly black.
Sir,
there was a solid 4 inches of crack showing.
I'm offended.
Which is most of the butt, really.
Oh my God. My husband is a hairy motherfucker. Look, he is Italian and has earned his hair stripes. I mean, the man has a hairy back. Like, it is what it is. He does not have this. He does
That's
not
what I mean.
Have this.
If it had been a
he
hairy
doesn't
back,
have butt bush.
Yes, exactly.
Butt
Look, Christina, exactly. Oh, like, it looks like if you haven't done maintenance downstairs in a while, except all, like a Venus flytrap all the way up the crack.
Oh, fuck you.
It was horrifying. I was like, who are you? Also, what's wrong with you?
I thought that all these, I thought all the planes were collectively no middle seat. I'm super shook.
There's no like across the board regulations. Like they've left it up to the airlines to determine what they're going to do. Yeah.
Who did you fly?
I flew Allegiant because it was the only airline that flew directly here. So I weighed my options. I chose to do that. And I was like, at least this way, I don't have to stop off in another, you know, airport and stuff like that. To me, it made sense. And when I booked my flight and even when I checked in, the flight didn't look that full. So I was like, oh, it's not going to be that bad. But I will tell people, because I know somebody who recently flew to New York for work, Delta. Yeah, like even if you have to do a layover, fly Delta because they are like the only airline that is really doing like fully like social distanced seating as far as I know.
That's
so,
what I've heard too. Yeah, I've heard everybody else is just like all shoulders. Like, y'all deal with it.
Yeah, at your own risk, I guess.
As a Delta person, we did get an email about that too, that they were like, we're not booking middle seats. That's why I thought that. I thought all airlines were kind of in the same boat.
After having been, I will say like after having been really inside for 7 months, basically, like I've barely gone out. Like Anthony and I haven't even really like eaten out or anything. Like we don't go out very much. Yeah. It was really anxiety provoking for my first like a time being around that many people for it to be in a tin can next to a man with the hairiest ass I've ever seen in my life.
Woof, 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 woof.
But I made it
there,
so
safe.
Yeah. So,
oh my gosh.
Oh my dear.
Yeah. No, we mainly just been working this week, my final week.
Woohoo!
At work.
Yeah.
So yeah, just nothing really.
Same old, same.
Yeah. Same old 2020 quarantine, trying to find anything to do except for watch Netflix.
Literally.
Dude, it's wild. Like out here, things are open. Like a lot of things are open, but I just can't get my brain wrapped around being around people. Like I can't adjust. I don't know. Like maybe like the last week I'm out here, I'll finally be like, now I feel okay to venture out somewhere. But like people are, we live where we live in Springfield. It's like fraternity row. So all the, you know, this is a college town and all classes are back open and people are that partying, man. Like
wild.
Last night, parties. Parties, parties. Because we're like fraternity sorority row. So it's a trip.
Just crazy. Just nuts. Yeah. I mean,
they said COVID is at its highest it's been yet.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think people are just like, whatever. Like they're like YOLO at this point. Like,
yeah, I feel so bombarded by this year. Like honestly, I don't want to say I feel like numb now, but it's just like, something cracked in me. The fly on Pence's head. It broke me. It broke me where I'm just like, well, that's it. I'm like, that was my level of fucks that I could give in a year has been reached. And it is October and I'm done. I'm just like so numb to it. I'm just all shoulders from here on out. Just, ugh, God, too much.
Yeah, I think we've all hit. Well, I was going to say, I think we've all hit maximum capacity, but we have an election in a couple weeks. So you better gird your loins, ma'am.
I know. Yeah. I know. Dude, my ballot is sitting here ready to be filled out and sent in.
Yep, Anthony sent me mine, so mine got in yesterday.
I triple checked because I had to move and everything like that. So I double checked yesterday. My registration is good to go at the new address. So, and we finally got our mailbox keys yesterday. So I got all excited thinking I would have mine in the mail, but I haven't gotten it.
Do the mail-in ballots have to be notarized?
No.
They don't? Okay. Out here, they do. In Missouri, they have to be notarized. So I was like, oh my God, am I going to have to find a notary to mail in my ballot?
I don't think you do. You could just put yours in the mail because you're not voting technically.
Right. Yeah. It's a California ballot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Good.
But I would get it in the mail ASAP.
Yeah. I'm going to fill it out this weekend.
Did you get your information booklet too?
Yeah. I got that before I left town. So I packed it in my suitcase so that I would have it.
There's so many references.
To talk to you guys about some of those propositions, not like right now on this podcast.
I know literally everybody is like, please no.
No,
like, we're also not from California and we don't care.
Let's all talk about Prop 22.
Let's not.
But yeah, mainly for anybody listening around the world, well, you don't care about the U.S. elections, or maybe you do because it affects a lot of people around the world. Vote. It's important. Yeah. Please vote. I did watch this amazing video of Australians watching the presidential debate.
Oh, man.
And comments on it.
I can't. My priceless. Fragile look, I've... For everything that 2020 has been, what's left of my ego, I can't handle watching people in countries who have their shit together to watch us flounder the way. Yeah. Like, I know it's happening, and like, I'm so happy for you guys, but I
good
can't.
For you, New Zealand.
Exactly. I'm like, I know it's bad. Okay, I know it's bad. I can't watch you talk about it being bad.
Right.
It's like when somebody makes fun of like your brother or your
exactly.
sister.
I'm like, I get
can
to
make
do that. I get to do that. And you can do that, but don't do it in front of me.
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Oh my gosh. It's amazing. Well, I'll let you guys know. I texted the girl group yesterday to let you guys know where I'm at mentally, where 2020 has led me. And that is... to watching Real Housewives for the first time in my life. I have never been a Real Housewives person. Something broke in me. Something mm-hmm. broke open. And I was like, you know what? Why not?
I mean,
why not?
You and I share that whole vacuuming grass thing. And I mm-hmm. feel like that show is the ultimate.
Oh, you know what happened?
Grass vacuuming.
I was looking for like gifts or something, and I was specifically looking for Nene Leakes gifts because she's like a gift queen, right? Mm-hmm. And then I was like, why are there so many like sound bites and gifts of Nene Leakes? What's happening on this show that mm-hmm. is facilitating this to go on? I was like, I'm going to start watching Real Housewives of Atlanta. Oh my God. Ooh. You guys, it's like a train wreck. It's like I can't look away, but at mm-hmm. the same time, I'm positively horrified that mm-hmm. grown ass women in their 30s and 40s are behaving this way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am secretly like kind of interested, but I would definitely have to watch it in secret because it is a trigger.
Oh, I'm watching it in secret. Eric. My brother walked in on me and I turned the page. Like I minimized the screen. I was like, I can't let people, I mean, here I am letting the whole world know, but like at the same time, I'm like, I can't let people actually watch me watch this.
Mm-hmm. Like you were caught watching porn. You're like flipping
exactly.
down.
Exactly.
Nothing. Nothing.
Turn the laptop.
Oh my God.
Horrifying.
I need a new like guilty pleasure too. I haven't like locked in on something. I've been watching Schitt's Creek.
Yes, that's what I was going to talk about at the end. Oof.
I have it. And it is called Married at First Sight. And I am now addicted. And I'm not going to lie. Look, it's horrible. It's trash. I remember I watched like the first season or two, like when it started years and years ago. And I kind of was like, this is horrid. It's dreadful. And
so what is the premise? They legitimately meet at the altar?
It's exactly what you think it is. It is
exactly that. So what they do is, there's these like panel of experts that are like psychologists and, you know, sex therapists and a pastor who's also like, you know, so it's like this group that like matches you with what they consider to be your perfect match. Right. And you just trust these people to get it right. And honestly, on occasion, they do. The one that's on Netflix, season 9, was actually really interesting. And I watched it, Dylan and I watched it, my son and I together. And it's a train wreck, but it's also surprisingly like interesting in the way that like the therapists and stuff, like they really guide people and they have some really incredible advice. But you know what? These are two strangers. So, and there's, there's that aspect too. So there's people who really like jump in feet first and are like, we're doing this damn thing. And there were couples like, honestly, that I'm like, you guys shouldn't be together, and ended up together. And then you're like, two, the other side of the social experiment is that you're being filmed the whole time. So either you're on your best behavior because you're on film, or it's adding a different stressor that a new relationship wouldn't have. So it's a weird balancing act, right?
There is something so weird to me about Married at First Sight because I can't see for myself placing that kind of like desperation, like that kind of like importance on being married, that you're like, I don't care who it is. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't get it. I guess I just don't get it.
I don't know. I mean, I don't think I could see myself doing it. But I don't know. It's an interesting premise, that's for sure. I have enjoyed it. I started season 10, and it's not as good as season 9. There might be a reason that season 9 is the only one that's available on Netflix.
Do they explain like on the show? I mean, I'm sure that they do, just like on like Love is Blind or whatever, like what led them to that point? Like, are they just like, I'm just tired of being single. I'm just ready to settle down, and I'm just going to put my trust in the process, which I feel like is always what they say in these reality shows. Yeah. Trust in the process.
I think that's kind of the idea. I think that it's hard too, because like I'm on season 10 right now, just kind of, and there's definitely like one guy who I'm just kind of like, dude, are you literally just on here because you want to be on TV? Because you clearly aren't.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that sucks too, because then you have the people who are like, you know, said all the right things to get on the show. And then you have the people who are like, I really am interested in being married and starting a chapter of my life with someone I can share this chapter with and have a partner. And the people who are really, really like invested in being a partner with someone and sharing their life. And then you have, like I said, it's just, and that's the thing too. It's like, you have to trust that maybe the experts were able to see through the people who, you know, were just there for the opportunity.
But then there's me, the skeptic, the cynical person who, like, it's a reality TV show, though. True. And, you know, there are producers who are invested in getting good TV. So I'm like, I don't necessarily trust that, like, you have my best interest at heart. Necessarily, like maybe the panel does, but like as far as who gets chosen to be on that show, you know, they pick people who are a hot mess. They did that on Love is Blind too. I'm like, these people are messy.
Yeah. messy. Too,
it's funny because I think unlike other reality shows where you're hoping for a mess, in this one, my hope is almost the opposite where it's actually more interesting. I'm more invested in the people.
You want it to work out.
Yeah. Who I see like both have potential. Like I'm almost like, please just let's. And I think they do a decent job of trying to give everybody equal time, but also to focus on the couples that are doing well and the things that they're doing to connect and the things that they're doing to.
Well, girl, you know I'm down. I will watch it on Netflix.
Yeah, 2020. Yeah. Here we are.
I will for sure watch it.
Yeah, it's. I actually thought it was really good. Okay. I have something interesting as well. I was just on Twitter and Candy Johnson, who I don't know if you guys know, I bet you do, Keegan, because you watch YouTube. She had just posted, what costumes are you tired of seeing? Like for, you know, since it's October. And I was thinking about that and I was like, what a fun FMK, right?
Oh.
Like costumes. Okay. Fuck, marry, kill.
Like costumes. Classic Halloween costumes?
Yeah. We've never done that, right?
No, we haven't. Okay. Well, okay. So I feel like this is kind of two separate questions or one that leads into another. So right. What costumes are you sick of seeing? No, stop it. I was a cat last year.
I know, I'm just teasing.
Rude. So rude. No, because actually, here's the thing. I actually I like all the classic ones. Like, I love seeing witches and cats and like I love all of those devil like we did devil, last year. Yeah. I think that those are fun to me. I like seeing all the classic ones. If there's anything broad and general that I'm sick of seeing, and this is not a hot take. This is, I mean, everyone talks about this every year. It's making things sexy that shouldn't be sexy.
Absolutely.
Like I don't need you shouldn't be a sexy sriracha bottle, okay? Like it's unnecessary. Like I don't get it. Why does this exist? You know, like
see, White Claw.
Oh my God.
Honestly, the only people who are allowed to be sexy White Claw would be the three of us because it's on brand. That's the only reason. But other than that, I'm just like, yeah, I don't need you to be like a sexy loofah. You know, something like that. I'm like, this bubble feels bath. Weird and unnecessary, you know. Yeah. But other than that, I don't care what you do on Halloween.
I'm the same. I just, the whole like, it's a joke now that like
Halloween Mr. Rogers, but make it sexy. Yeah,
exactly. So, yeah, that's my only beef. But other than that, like the costumes that I've find like I love when people are super creative about it, you know, when it's like a pun or something. Those are the ones that tickle me the most, the super creative ones like that.
How many couples are gonna go as Pence and the Fly for Halloween?
Oh,
couples costume. Sexy dude. Fly.
Sexy fly.
Dude.
Dude, you just made $1 million.
Brilliant. That's actually fucking brilliant.
If Anthony and I could actually go out on Halloween, that's what we would do.
Oh, yeah. Just spray paint his hair white.
Mm-hmm. Oh, dude. And just plaster it down. And, you know, the most makeup. Like the most just pancake. He looked like a fucking android.
He looked like a zombie. He looked terrible. Yeah. I'm like, dude, ever since the fucking debate with Nixon and JFK, it's like they know optics are so important for television.
I know it's not about looks.
Split screen.
I know it's not about looks, but I'm like, also, Kamala is beautiful.
She like, is radiant and vibrant and full of life and intelligence.
His eyes were dead. Well, and he had one that might actually be dead.
Pink eye.
Oh my God. Dude, but that anyway, costume idea, I.
That's fire.
Wow. That is fire.
Pence and sexy fly.
Dude, I'm kind of mad that I can't dress up like that this year.
We'll do it at home and just take pictures.
Oh my God.
get on Zoom or whatever.
Still one of my favorite costumes is, so Halloween is a big deal in West Hollywood. They have the parade every year, which obviously we're not having this year because 2020 sucked all joy out of everything. So the first year that I moved here and I was on Santa Monica Boulevard, and this was early in the morning, the day of the parade, talking like 8 o'clock or something, heading to work and crossing the street. Was somebody that was in a pair of tidy whiteys and what looked to be a child-sized costume of Buzz Lightyear.
Oh,
just had the Buzz Lightyear wings, and I was like, living your best life at 8 a.m., like going to some, I love Halloween. I love Halloween in West Hollywood, and I'm super bummed to not get to see all the costumes this year.
Yeah,
me too. Because it's so fun.
I'm so sad that I remember when, you know, because it, like this happened, lockdown happened like right before my birthday. And I remember thinking like, well, like, but it'll be done by the holidays. So we'll still get to do all of our like,
yeah,
friend things, holiday things. No, no, everything's canceled. It's all canceled. Man, God bless. If you had a birthday in January, February, or the beginning of March, I mean, God bless you because you got it in. I'm happy for you.
Good for you.
Yeah, it's me and Cassie just glaring at Christina because the two of us had our...
I think that's like the last time that we went to karaoke, too.
Appalling.
It was my birthday.
Truly appalling. Unbelievable. No. That like we haven't karaoke'd together. Well, I just got really sad. Okay, anyway, we're going to fuck, marry, kill...
Halloween costumes.
Do you want to do the classics like we did last year? And then I'll just post the picture of us from last year. We could do witch cat and...
witch cat devil?
Devil, yeah.
The costumes, though. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah, obviously.
Okay.
No, each of us as those characters.
No, I'm not ready for that FMK. No,
me neither. I really don't need the public to weigh in on... on that. If you guys listen, if you're listening to this, you keep that to yourselves. All right, we don't want to know. My ego can't take it. Not this year. It certainly cannot. Okay, so last year we were witch, devil, black cat. Classic Halloween costume choices. Mm-hmm. Okay, let me think about this.
I'm gonna marry the black cat.
Yeah,
solid.
Because
steady
kitten.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Hold on. I know that the people listening can't see this, and I already showed Cassie, but look, speaking of.
Yeah. Aw, black cat. Yeah.
That's my baby. Yeah, no, black cats, reliable, cute.
Yeah.
I mean.
Independent. They're not going to bug you too much.
Exactly. But they're snuggly when you need them. Mm. Yeah. Marry the black cat. Fuck the devil. I mean, for so many reasons. I mean, but there's so many variations of that costume too. So it'll like keep you on your toes, and so it could be naughty. It can be traditional. It can be a lot of different things. I feel like it's very versatile. So fucking the devil and killing the witch. It's
right on.
Yeah, that's what I'm going for.
I have a different take for sure, I think. I think as far as costumes, I am going to fuck Black Cat because I think it's the sexiest of the costumes, right?
Costume-wise, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely the sexiest. Like, you can really slink it up in a Black Cat. I am going to marry the witch because the witch can be so many things, right? There's so many avenues you can take with witch, which is that, you know, like you could go, you know, steampunk, there's just so many things you could do. Witch costume is such a, I don't know, classic, fun, always fun. You could do it different every single year. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It would keep you on your toes. And I'm going to kill the devil. I've been the devil twice. So it's not that I dislike that costume. I like it. It's just maybe I've done it twice. And so I'm like, meh, I'm over it.
Been there, done that.
Gosh, this is hard. Okay. I think I am going to marry the witch. Because whether we're talking actual witches or costumes, I just think that they're fun. They're powerful. You mm-hmm. can do it any number of ways. You can be sexy witch or you can be scary witch. They're versatile. So I like that. I'm going to marry the witch. I am going to... Yes. I am going to fuck Black Cat. Yeah. Because I saw Tim Burton's Batman when I was young. And yes. Michelle Pfeiffer in that costume.
Wow.
Still lives in my memory. I'm going to do that. And I'm going to kill the devil costume. But you know what? I actually think the devil costume is so cute. I really, really like it. And I feel like it's not overdone. Like, I feel like people don't That's do it very true. Much. Where I'm from, I mean, it was off the table. Like, devil costumes were not allowed in my life. So I didn't get to experience them very much. But I actually think that they're, like, such a cute classic Halloween costume. But just from these options, I'm going to kill the devil costume.
Yeah. Hmm.
There we go.
Fun times.
Oh, and hold on. We have a new patron. Una Momento.
What? Oh, I just thought of a super offensive costume that Uh-oh. Shouldn't be done. I remembered it from my childhood. Did you guys ever, or did you have anyone in your trick-or-treat group that would their costume one year was homeless?
Or oh, yes.
Bum?
Yeah.
Ooh. Well, don't, that was a big
don't
thing.
Don't do that anymore.
It was, okay, whenever I was a kid, hobo. So in the 90s, it was a hobo. Yeah.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where it was like you had a stick with a handkerchief tied to the end of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Full of Johnny cakes or whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
No. Don't. Yeah. Yeah. It's no bueno.
Anything no. that's cultural appropriation as well.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I feel like it's 2020 and that should go without saying. However, every year. I feel every like year. If you do it now, you have to know, like, you're doing it for attention, right? Like, that's negative right. attention. Right. Like, because you have to know that, like, people are no going to call you out on it at this point. Yeah. But people still do it. They still do it every single year. So, yeah, that I would say that's a big no-no.
Yeah.
For sure.
Okay.
We have a new patron. Very exciting. So we would like to welcome Rochelle Weintraub to our Patreon family. Hi. Hello. Welcome. We're so happy to have you.
Bienvenue.
Yay. Thank you.
And we will get your rewards in the mail to you soon. Also, we did just record our October episode of Crazy in Love Movies, in which we covered Christina's pick, My Best Friend's Wedding. So that is coming for you soon. Rochelle, look out for that if you want to listen to that episode. We also have a large back catalog of episodes for you to peruse through if you would like to. Oh, I also want to, since this is kind of like business corner, I also want to mention again that we are still doing our fall sale, hoodies, face masks, mugs, all 15% off. So go and check that out. Get you some goodies for fall. The sweaters are really like warm and comfy. I like them a lot. And we have a new design as well. So go check out our new Yikes on Bikes merch.
Yes. Yes. And oh, by the way, this is my worst date. I'm Christina.
I'm Keegan.
I'm Cassie.
That is so weird. Christina never goes first.
I know.
Yeah.
Strange. There we go. Mixing it up.
Well, you guys want to take five and we'll come back with stories?
Sounds yes. good. And we're back. Okay, so I've got the crazy in love this week, so I will kick us off with stories. This one is a doozy, so Uh-oh. Be prepared. Be prepared for cringe. Okay. When I was 18, I had a huge crush on a coworker of mine. Let's call him Jared. Jared was about a year older than me and had gone to a neighboring high school. I remembered seeing him at football games, and we'd even been introduced through mutual friends, small towns and all that. Everyone knows everyone. Mm-hmm. And I always thought he was incredibly good looking. After school, I got a job over the summer at a local, quote, Mexican restaurant. I put Mexican in quotes because this was Iowa. Mm. Our salsa consisted mostly of tomato paste and sugar. I can relate because, like, here in Springfield, Missouri, there's a restaurant called Mexican Villa. Yes, I'm putting them on blast. I don't care. They're a very popular Mexican restaurant. But when I moved here, man, we moved here from the Southwest. Like, I was born in New Mexico. So we went there. It was one of the first places we went. Their salsa, I swear to God, it's sweet and sour sauce.
Ew.
I swear to God. Oh. Granted, listen, I haven't been there since, and I was probably like 12. So maybe it's different now. Might be different now. Anyway, Jared got hired about a week after me, and I couldn't believe my luck. I was sure that I had totally blossomed since high school and was no longer the gangly, nerdy girl he had once met. Now was my time to shine. And shine I did. I was charming, funny, smart. I somehow managed to always say the exact right thing, and it worked like a charm. After a month of working together, he finally asked me out. I was elated. Oh. The day of our date came, and I hit a small snag. My period had started that morning. A bit of a bummer, but I was determined not to let it ruin my night out with Jared. I took 2 Midol and set to work in the morning, prepping myself for that evening's date. Exfoliating, shaving, blowing out my hair, finding the perfect outfit, etc. Mm-hmm. It was an all-day affair. Jared came around my parents' house at 6 o'clock. I popped 2 more Midol since I was cramping and hopped into his lifted truck. Also, getting into a lifted truck when you're on your period sounds awful. Mm-hmm. Anything that involves like a lifting of the leg motion, I'm not a fan of. He took me to Chili's. I know how that sounds, but we were teenagers and the options were limited. So actually, this didn't bother me at all.
No, this is a fancy teenager date.
Yes.
He liked her. He took her to Chili's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is Iowa. Actually, I feel like, expensive Applebee's.
Yeah. Yes.
You know what
agreed,
I mean?
Agreed. And, you know, I think it's just because I'm at home. But from what she's saying, I'm picturing very similar situation to like my high school, where it was like 2 small towns near each other. And you would have had to have driven in to go to whatever restaurants are nearby. And so, like, yeah, there was probably a Chili's was, you know, close by. Yeah. I ordered fajitas and things seemed to be going pretty well, except that I was starting to feel a little sick. I pushed through. About halfway through dinner, I'm feeling hot and cold at the same time, and I can barely keep up with whatever high school glory football story he's telling me. My stomach is in knots, and unfortunately, I know exactly what's coming.
Oh, no.
I politely excuse myself to go powder my nose. As soon as I am a safe distance away from my date, I half hobble, half run into the bathroom and throw open the nearest stall. I had the worst case of period shits you have ever seen.
Yep.
I knew it was coming. I knew it. Yep.
I couldn't even think about what it must have been like for the other women in the bathroom that night. I got it all out, or so I thought. About 7 minutes later, and was sweating profusely. I changed my tampon, gathered myself, gave myself a quick pep talk, and went back out to meet Jared. I tried to be as charming as possible as I told him I wasn't feeling well and could we possibly rain check the rest of the date for another night. I was highly apologetic and made sure that he knew it wasn't him, it was me, and I really, really wanted to see him again. He was totally understanding, quickly paid the check, and before I knew it, we were on our way home. Thank God. On the way, though, there had been some kind of accident. Traffic in this part of town was never bad. Bad traffic for us meant a 10-minute delay maximum. Of course, this would be the one time when traffic was completely stopped.
My nausea
had returned and I was cramping hard. I was trying to play it cool and I rode down the window to get some air. Big mistake. The unmistakable smell of a freshly mowed down skunk wafted through the open window. That was the final straw. I started gagging immediately. My date noticed, Are you all right? Before I could answer, I felt the hot acid in my throat. I opened the door and began violently throwing up. It was the kind of vomiting that made my eyes well up with tears as if they were going to burst from my head. I had to lean my body really far out of the truck because it was raised so high off the ground.
Please don't tell me she farted.
As I threw up, I felt my stomach start to rumble.
No.
The sheer force of the vomiting had awoken something in my intestine. No. I felt it. There was no stopping it. As I was throwing up, a loud, thunderous fart exploded in Jared's direction as I feel something vaguely soggy down below.
Oh, no.
I wanted to die. I considered rolling out of the car and into the ditch right then. Eventually, the torrent of vomit stops. I sit back up, not daring to look at Jared. We say nothing for the remainder of the ride home. I don't even remember if I said anything to him as I exited the car. When I got up to my room, I was completely in shock. I took a look at myself in the mirror. My skin had that waxy look. I turned to grab my PJs. I just wanted to curl up and fall asleep. And that's when I noticed a giant red stain on the back of my jeans.
No.
I'm sure the blood had been pushed out by the force of my fart.
Oh, no.
And I'm sure Jared had seen it.
Oh, no.
The next morning, I was supposed to go into work. I no-called, no-showed. And later, texted my boss to tell him I would no longer be going into work. And I quit. My friend picked up my last check. And in a couple of months, I left in the fall for college. I never saw Jared again.
Oh, thank God. Wow. Bye.
That's what you have to do. Like, I'm sorry. There's no recovering from that. There is no, you know what? Cut your losses.
Start a new life somewhere else.
You're young. You're just out of high school. This is when you can just quit your job. I'm out. Moving.
Deuces. Bye. Yeah.
Oh, that's my God. Oh. But can we please, like, normalize periods?
Yeah,
though. Honestly.
No, totally.
But to be honest, like, she was 18. She was excited. Nowadays, you cancel. Like, if you're feeling like that, because that's how I get too. Like, I get sick. You know, the sweaty, hot, cold chills, like all of that stuff.
Yep.
You just rain check, man. Next weekend, we'll do this next weekend.
Yeah. Yes. Not every period, but definitely there are periods when I'm like, whoo wee, here it comes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So I got this story from Reddit. So a bit of a backstory. I married young to an awful man. And after the divorce, had no idea about dating. This was my first adult date. I met him online. We agreed to meet at a local coffee shop at 10 a.m. The man shows up and it is immediately clear that he is at least 10 years older than his online profile.
No.
Ugh.
No. Honestly. That's okay. Weird, but not a deal breaker. I already had my coffee. I was nervous, so I arrived early and went. So when he arrived, he went up, got a coffee, and joined me at the table with a coffee and one of those really large brownies. We exchange pleasantries. Then he proceeds to talk nonstop for the next 2.5 hours. I recently wrote a novel, so he was trying to convince me that he is an author as well. He proceeds to describe popular movies like The Terminator, but with a minor change, like The Terminator was an alien, not a robot, and then claims it was a completely original idea, despite it being just the same as the movie.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I'm an author too. Let me tell you about this book I wrote. No, it's not like The Terminator at all. It's totally different. Could you imagine?
Oh my God.
That was annoying, but also not quite a deal breaker. The whole time he is talking, he is drinking his coffee and eating his brownie with his mouth open. He is spraying spittle across the table. Mm-mm. And it is just disgusting. I just discreetly scoop backwards. Then because he doesn't stop his talking to chew and swallow, he starts loudly burping. He has brownie bits stuck in his teeth. He is spraying brownie across the table. And he is still talking. I get so bored that after 10 minutes of his burping, I started counting the burps.
Oh my God.
I'm sorry. I think I'd have to go home. Like, oh, yeah. We're done, sir.
23 burps later, I finally get a word in and mention that the coffee shop closed 10 minutes ago. I said maybe 30 words the entire time. I also can't look at Brownie without seeing what I saw. He wanted to keep dating, but I didn't. He was lacking in basic intelligence and table etiquette. He never even learned anything about me. I could have just been a cardboard cutout sitting there. He could have just propped up a mirror and talked to himself, and he would have thought that the date was great. He actually told me it was the best date he had ever been on in years. Yikes. Ugh.
Ew. Yikes. Ew. Ew.
20 simod burps. 20 simod burps. You guys.
Yeah, no, thank you. I mean, I can definitely see myself counting burps if it's at that point of the date where you're just like, here we are.
One. Oh, that's disgusting.
And 2.5 hours is interminable.
Oh, look.
It's honestly so long. When you're somewhere you don't want to be.
I don't understand how she, like, I mean, you make something up. Like, after the first hour and a half, make something up, man. You don't have a friend you can text to tell her to call you with an excuse for you to leave?
I mean, I think, too, it's your first real date as an adult, she said. So, I mean,
That
she's
does
at
change
that point
things.
Where she's probably like, okay, I'm going to put up with this.
It'll That's
just
true.
Be over soon and.
That's true. It is a little different if it's like your first date ever.
Yeah. No. We remember some of Christina's early dates.
Mm-hmm. But even Christina just got up and walked away. But you are an adult. Yeah. So like a real adult.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So this one got written into us. The subject is worst sex of my life.
Uh-oh. Oh, I'm interested.
Oh, no.
I'll preface this by saying that I just got dumped by my boyfriend of almost 3 years. I'm still very much in love with him, but such is life. Oh, honey, I'm sorry. This happened just yesterday, and I'm not kidding. In the middle of it, I thought to myself, wow, this sucks, but it'll be a great submission to my worst date.
I'm glad we could be here for you in your time of need.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, I just got my heart broken into a bajillion pieces for reasons still unbeknownst to me. When I was moving back from across the country, I decided, fuck it, I'm going to get on Tinder and see what's up in my hometown where I moved back to. Well, I matched with this beautiful guy. Ugh, he is so attractive. I was like, well, shit, what a perfect way to get over my ex. Mm-hmm. Well, girl, same. I remember my distraction dick very well. So we end up talking a lot, talking on the phone and FaceTiming. I'm getting good vibes and he's even cuter in person. Then he comes over and we hang out. I eventually made the first move and invited him to my bedroom. This is where it gets weird AF.
Uh-oh.
Okay. So first off, horrible at kissing, which is such a bummer because I love kissing. I also like someone who takes initiative, but he didn't. So I was like, okay, no worries. I'll just take the initiative. So when we get to my bedroom, it's like as soon as we start, he starts moaning so loud.
Oh, that's such a turnoff. I mean, if you're in it and you're enjoying it, moaning is fine, but just coming in.
It's just like, oh, gross. And like really loud moaning too. That's so weird. It's like the hisser, the guy that hissed. I was like,
Oh God. Oh like, God.
I'm all for a good moan, but Jesus fucking Christ, we literally just started. Then he was
like,
just
what could possibly be feeling that good in the beginning?
Exactly.
Like, you usually don't do that until you get like worked up, right?
Yeah, I mean, generally speaking, my consensus has been with the focus group that I've been
part of.
Sure.
The moans have basically been at the end. Yeah.
Right.
Generally.
Yeah.
So. Weird. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
It feels fake to me. I'm skeptical. if you start too early.
Yeah. Then he was just laying on top of me like a dead fish and moaning so loud, and I was trying so hard not to laugh.
What?
I'd be like, are you okay?
And, that, and like also like, don't put all of your body weight on me. What's happening?
Yes.
This is the least sexy thing I've ever heard.
I know. It's just laying, someone laying their full body weight on you, not it, moving, you and know, just moaning.
It just reminds me of in The Crucible, whenever that guy is being like, they're laying slabs of concrete on top of him and he's like, more weight. That's what I think of. it feels like 15th century torture.
Right.
But I was like, okay, this is our first time doing this. First times can always be awkward since we don't know each other. Maybe the tension will ease a bit. No, it did not. It was like that for probably 5 minutes. So finally I was like, fuck this. I will make this more interesting. And I threw him back and was like, okay, maybe it'll finally get better. But no, it did not. It truly did not. Finally, after like an hour, I'm not even kidding, it was like an hour or maybe longer of the same shit. I'm fucking tired. Neither of us got off. And at that point, I'm just done.
Yeah.
I was like,
neither of you? Like that?
Neither.
That is really bad. Like if you can't even?
Yeah. After an hour.
No. Dude, it's like, at that point, you're just waiting. Please just hurry up and be done with
this. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. No. Because that's just too long. It's too long. My jaw hurts. Everything hurts. That's a Chloe Ting workout right there.
That's longer than a Chloe Ting workout, dude. If Chloe Ting gives me an hour of workouts, that's a long day.
Yeah. I was like, dude, I'm tired and I have to work in the morning. We can try this again sometime. It was so weird and I'm so confused. I ended up letting him stay the night because it was about 1 a.m. at that point. And he was just laying on my bed. Anyway, that was legitimately the worst sex I have ever had in my life. It goes for a great story, though. I picture her typing this on her phone.
While right he's sleeping. He's sleeping next to her.
She's like, to my worst date.
Let me tell you about this dumb shit.
It truly is like appallingly bad. Like that is like, I don't even understand how that happens. Like, usually in these stories, because we've had stories similar to this before, usually, like, the dude is enjoying it, or, like, he thinks he's doing a good job or something. But clearly, this guy...
They're just sexually incompatible. You know what I mean? There's just some people... And it sucks. I have had dates like that that seem to be going great, like and then you just get into bed and like nothing's works, like you just don't fit together physically, and it's just
smashing your bodies together.
Cut your losses, dude. An hour is
it really makes me think of like, you know, whenever you used to play with your Barbie and Ken dolls and it was just like just banging plastic together. Oh man.
Oh god.
Okay. Ugh. So my crazy in love story. I am gonna say quickly, yes, there is some general fuckery happening in this story, and for that I apologize. But there is no cannibalism. So feel free to consume your lunch while you eat this, because we did get messages last time of people who were like, I'm trying to enjoy my salad and you're talking about meat hooks. That will not be discussed, but there will be some other things that may make you gag. So you've been warned. I'll warn you again when we get to it. But I am going to tell the crazy in love story of Candy Mossler. Now, I had first heard this story when I watched an episode of A Crime to Remember, which I love A Crime to Remember.
Yeah.
It does do a thing that I generally don't like, which is reenactments, but I feel like their reenactments are pretty high quality. Like,
yeah, they're pretty decent.
Yeah, they have like, they clearly have like a costume budget and stuff. And like, Michelle McNamara was on a couple of episodes because they, you know, go and they have like experts talk about the stories and things like that. And so I enjoy that show, and it's on Hulu if anybody wants to, give it a watch. This episode is season 2, episode 3. I didn't rewatch this one before I prepped for this, but I remember it being a good episode. And I got a lot of my information from a Gizmodo article and deadinchicago.com and a couple of New York Times articles. Okay. So Candace Candy Mosler was this super glamorous platinum blonde socialite. She was one of those women who kept her real age a secret from everyone, like one of those like high society, a lady never shares how old she is kind of women. But she was really fun and outgoing and one of those ladies who like women wanted to be her, men wanted to be with her type of women. So in 1949, she met Jacques, who went by Jack Mosler, and he was a multimillionaire about 20 years her senior. Again, no one knew her actual age, but approximately 20 years older than her. And he owned a chain of bank and finance companies. Now, Jack was described as somewhat of a workaholic. His mom had been widowed when he was very young, and so he not only was inspired by her hard work ethic, because she worked very hard to provide for them, but also was driven to provide for her and his siblings, because he was the oldest, I think, and just secure a better life for his family. When he met Candy, they were both recently divorced, and of course, this older man was taken by this beautiful younger woman. Now, even though Jack was dedicated to his work, he was also described as an excellent father. In his first marriage, he had had 4 children, and he was super, super devoted to his kids. After Candy and Jack were married, they moved into a 28-bedroom mansion in Houston, Texas. 28 bedrooms.
That's too much.
I don't know what you... How big is that house?
What are you, opening an orphanage? Like, that's crazy.
How do you... So they had this 28-bedroom home in Houston, and then they also had a vacation apartment in Key Biscayne, Florida.
Hi. You know.
Yeah, because you need more space. Yeah. Clearly, 28 bedrooms isn't enough. I'm really picturing like an Aaron Spelling home, you know, like one of those that's just like you get lost in it. It's insanely big. So Jack continued to make like hella money throughout this time. And eventually he amassed a fortune of $33 million, which would be nearly $300 million in today's money. Jeez. So he was rich, rich, like mega rich, rich. And of course,
they should have opened an orphanage is what I'm saying.
Well, okay, hold on.
Oh, so, shit.
Of course, Candy was living. She became accustomed to an extremely lavish lifestyle, as you would. I mean, when you have that kind of money, I almost can't even fault her. I'm like, you have so much money. Of course, you're like buying all of the best things all the time. So the first 8 years of their marriage, things were good. They seemed really happy. They were like socialites. Everyone seemed to like them. They were like the best of the best in like Houston society. Get ready for the first weird, wild shit that happened here. So Jack was watching the news 8 years into their marriage from their Houston home when he saw a story about a man named Leonard Glenn. This could be its own crazy in love. In fact, when I was doing this, I was like, oh gosh, that'd be a good one for another time. But Glenn had a history of mental illness. And he shot his newly pregnant wife and then stabbed their youngest child, which was an infant boy, to death before bundling up his remaining children, 3 boys and a girl, in the car and driving them all over Chicago. Like he said he was going to drive them to Tennessee or something, but ended up just kind of driving aimlessly throughout Chicago until he eventually crashed into a snowbank. He had been sent to a psychiatric facility before in 1954, but his wife had begged for him to be released. And at that time, they had declared him sane, but with chronic alcoholism. So he ended up murdering her 3 years later.
Jesus.
Mm-hmm. So police found and arrested Leonard, and he was committed to a state hospital. And the children were given to his wife, Betty, his wife's brother, but the brother was unable to care for the kids long term. So Jack is at home in Houston watching this story on the news because it made like national news. And he saw that the kids were like all but orphaned, like they were going to be split up because the uncle couldn't take care of them. So it tugged at his heartstrings, and he knew that he had more than enough space to adopt mm-hmm. these kids. He had 28 yeah. bedrooms.
They can each have three.
Yeah.
Right, three
yeah.
rooms.
So him and Candy traveled from Houston to Chicago, and they were like, we want to adopt all the children. And the authorities were like, great. So they adopted all four of these kids wow. and brought them oh. into their home. So the first 4 years after the children were adopted were pretty idyllic. Like the family seemed happy. Again, they were popular. They were obviously looked at as these incredibly generous, kind people for having taken these kids in. But
Daddy Warbucks.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, no, like, these kids had gone through something terribly traumatic. That story, like, I didn't linger on it very much, but it's actually really horrible. Because the baby, after he stabbed the baby wasn't dead, and he took the baby with them.
Oh,
geez.
And the baby was alive after they found all of the kids, but died later in the hospital. Like, just terrible things Jesus. For these kids to have lived through. So for them to be adopted by this, you know, family, and they got to stay together, and right, it seemed like such a, you know, the happiest ending that there could be for these kids, but alas, not to be. So in 1961, Candy's nephew, Melvin Powers, entered their lives. Now, Melvin was 24 years old, and he was about 20 years younger than Candy. And he was originally from Birmingham, Alabama, and had a short stint in the Navy before doing a variety of like oddball jobs that eventually resulted in him kind of doing a con job in Michigan that ended that he ended up being convicted and serving 90 days in jail for. So he really seemed like the type of person who was kind of doing whatever he needed to do for a quick buck, right? He didn't really right. want to like work hard, mm-hmm. but was in it to get cash quick. So after serving the 90 days, his mom, Candy's sister, tells her son, hey, maybe you should go to Houston and hang out with your auntie and uncle for a little bit. They're loaded as fuck. They can help you out. They'll help you get a leg up. So makes his way to Houston, and Jack agrees to let Melvin move into their gigantic house. Again, tons of space. Why not? Mm-hmm. And he also agrees to help Melvin with his business ventures, and eventually hires him to a financial firm. I mean, what are family for, right? Mm. Get ready to get grossed out.
Okay.
So Candy and Melvin have never met before, I don't think. Why? Who knows? This is your sister's son.
I was
no
just
idea.
Thinking, I'm like, how have they not? Okay.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, from what I read, that's kind of what it seemed like. Maybe they had met when he was like little or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But maybe she just wasn't very close with her sister. I don't know. Either way, when they meet, sparks fly.
Wait,
oh,
what?
Gross.
Wait, what? Wait.
I told you.
Wait, what?
I told you to prepare yourself. I told you to prepare yourself. I gave you a warning.
That's not the warning. The warning, no. No, no.
Listen, no. It's going to get out. Bad.
No.
Just no. hang in there. You just have no. to hang in there with me.
No.
So Candy would later say that she was feeling lonely because her husband, Jack, had been... This is also messed up. She said she was lonely because her husband, Jack, had been struck by a mysterious illness that left him a homosexual.
Oh, that is a lot to unpack.
It's so Those much to process.
Last couple minutes, I'm like, okay.
This left Candy. Compute. So Candy was in desperate need for companionship when Mel came along.
Okay.
And she needed a shoulder to cry on, if you will. So they began an affair fairly quickly, and it was pretty easy for them to hide their relationship from Jack because at this point he was in his mid to late 60s and he was spending most of his time at their vacation home in Florida. Now,
I
getting some distraction dick.
Time out.
Okay.
Christina, you're the only one who has a sibling with children.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody. Look, guys, this is not, they are not tutors. Okay, they're not like, this isn't royalty in, you know, 15th century France, all right?
Even
like,
then,
we don't marry cousins, we don't marry nephews, we don't marry people, we don't keep it in the family like that.
No.
In the 1950s. All right. So, now there is some evidence that Jack was gay, or at least interested in exploring his sexuality, which was, of course, at the time deemed to be incredibly taboo, especially in high society Texas, and for like a businessman in high society Texas. So some speculate that he was spending so much time in Florida so that he could kind of like be a little bit more open, get some freedom to figure out what his sexuality was. And, you know, do that away from the prying eyes of the Houston elite. But this is really just speculation.
Wait, but do they explain what sickness he had? He's like, got the flu.
What a weird thing for her to say. Like a mysterious illness.
What the fuck?
However.
It's one of the side effects of...
it's a COVID side effect.
Jesus.
However, even if Candy and Mel had been able to keep their relationship a secret from Jack, they were not able to keep it a secret from everybody around the house. Because can you imagine being a servant in that home? Imagine. How much are you vacuuming the grass? Like, how many times have you cleaned Candy's doorknobs where you're like, what's going on in there?
I'm dusting walls.
Yes.
Just dusting the air.
So about a year into their affair, a servant in the house was like, man, this don't feel like no aunt nephew relationship I've ever seen. Something is fishy here. So this nosy Nelly did what any of us would do. She snuck into Candy's room and she read that bitch's diary. That's
damn.
A loyal servant. She read the diary, and Candy, being an absolute idiot who had never read one Nancy Drew book in her life, detailed her relationship with Melvin. I can only imagine. Can you imagine this servant like just flipping pages, reading this diary? So the servant like goes to her room, right? Gets out her stationery and pens a letter to Jack in Florida. And she's like, yo. Guess what your wife has been up to? Wow. So he immediately fires Melvin from the financial firm, and he calls authorities to remove him from the home in Houston. Melvin is not going quietly. He is resisting officers as they are forcibly escorting him out. And as he's leaving, he's heard saying, one day I'll return as the owner of this mansion.
Oh.
Again, a dumb thing to say out loud. Given the circumstances.
Yeah.
So Jack, though, like takes him seriously, like is a little nervous about this guy. And so he writes in his personal diary, if Mel and Candace don't kill me first, I'll have to kill them.
Jesus.
So after this,
diary.
I know the diaries in this story. After this, Candy and Jack formally separate, though neither one of them wanted to be the one to file for divorce, because according to their prenup, if Jack filed, Candy would get half of his millions, and if she filed, she would only get $200,000. So neither one of them wanted to be the one to file. She was already receiving, and this is some banana shit, she was already getting $5,000 a week allowance, which in today's money is $45,000 a week.
Wow.
That's more than like the average household in America makes in a year. You know, like,
no shit.
Yeah.
So to keep up her lifestyle, And it was, you know, more than enough to live comfortably. Again, like there are families in the Midwest who live on $45,000 a year.
So can you imagine that insane. Much money a week? She could get like a little place. Never mind. I don't want her to have a little place for.
But it's just like people get so. Money must be one hell of a drug, man. It really must be, because people end up in this place where they're like, it's not enough. Like to me, $45,000 a week.
Jesus.
Dude, just chill. Like, it's fine. You know?
Yeah.
You don't have to see him if you don't want to see your husband. Like, you don't have to see him. Yeah. But whatever. Live separate lives.
Ideal. Yeah.
It's speculated, though, that another reason that Jack didn't want to file for a divorce is because he was worried about what Candy would say about his sexuality to the press in the event of a messy divorce. But I'm like,
yeah,
she's sleeping with a blood relative. I feel like you have just as much ammo to throw back at her.
You got the upper hand.
Yeah, but
for sure, because what he's doing isn't wrong.
Yeah. And what he's doing is also just at this point hearsay, but you actually have written down how much.
Right. But it really does speak to the fear at the time. Like, I understand, like, because of the way that our society was at that time, like, he was that scared of any of that coming to light, which is really sad. But either way, the only way that Candy and, by extension, Mel could get their hands on the $33 million fortune was in the event of Jack's death. So, after their separation, Jack is pretty much living in Florida full-time, like, in the vacation home. So in late June 1964, Candy is like, you know what? I'm going to bring the kids to go see Jack. I'm going to bring the kids to go see Jack in Florida. And so she and the kids, they go up to the apartment and they only stay for a couple of hours before Candy starts complaining of a headache. Now, Candy had been known to have debilitating migraines throughout her life. Girl, same. I understand how difficult that is. Like, it's terrible. So it wasn't unusual that she was saying that, like, her head was really hurting. What I do find unusual, and maybe this is just a product of the time, I don't know, the gender roles of the time, is that when Candy finally was like, okay, I'm fed up with being in pain, I want to go to the ER and, like, get someone to give me some meds or something. Mm-hmm. She takes all four children with her. It's midnight. And she takes.
Why not just leave them?
Why not just leave them with their dad? Like, why would you pack all the kids into the car and take them with you to the ER at midnight? To me, that seems weird, but whatever.
Yeah, it's suspect.
Yeah. So she takes all of the kids with her. And not long after she leaves, an intruder enters the apartment. And there's a scuffle that results in Jack being brutally stabbed and bludgeoned over the head. When Candy, and this is, look, she's a terrible person for many, many reasons, but this is probably, like, the number one thing for me. So Candy returns with the children to the apartment, and they find Jack wrapped up in a blood-soaked blanket. These kids have already experienced the worst thing they could have ever experienced, and now they have just seen their adopted father, like, murdered. Like, okay. So Candy calls the cops immediately, and they determine almost as soon as they look at the body that this was likely someone who knew Jack because of the incredible amount of overkill. Jack had been stabbed 39 times.
Jesus. Oh, my God.
So investigators start to talk to neighbors who say that they'd heard commotion, and one of them says that they saw a dark-haired man fleeing the premises. And when they question Candy as to whether or not anyone would want to hurt Jack, she wastes no time in telling police that her husband was known to bring strange men home, so maybe it was a jealous lover.
Okay.
Ooh.
Police, of course, you know, they take that into consideration, but as they're tracking people down, trying to get info, it's not long before they find Jack's diary and they discover not only Candy and Melvin's relationship, but also that Jack was afraid of what they might do to try and get their hands on the money. So Candy has a pretty tight alibi, but where was Melvin? So in Jack's apartment, they found some bloody fingerprints. They run them through the system and they come back to who? Melvin.
So shocking.
One of Jack's cars, the one that was usually driven by Candy when she was in Florida, was reported stolen. And when they located the car, they found more bloody fingerprints. Who belonged to who? Melvin. Messy, messy, messy. There were also witnesses who reported having seen Melvin in nearby Miami on the night of the murder. And within a couple of days, authorities had found and arrested Melvin. When Candy heard that Melvin was arrested, she hired a top defense attorney for him. Fun fact, that defense lawyer that she hired from Melvin was also the one who defended James Earl Ray, who is Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassin. So,
yeah.
Real piece of shit. Yep. So police are pretty sure that Candy is involved at this point, though, and so they take her into custody as well. Now, Candy knows that her delicate disposition will not do well behind bars. So she hires a team of lawyers to prevent her from spending even one day in jail. So for a year after the murder, both Candy and Melvin are free on bond. They're just living their best lives. They're still together, living their best lives. And when it finally goes to trial, they're both asserting their innocence, but the prosecution was like, listen, y'all, these two nasties wanted to be together and inherit all this money. Old boy was worth $200 million dollars gross, $22 million net. In today's money, $1.6 billion gross, Jesus. $177 million net worth. So, hella motive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The prosecution also presents pictures of these two dummies out vacationing together, just having a grand old time, not even really appearing to be like hiding their relationship. And it's also said that in the hours before the murder, Melvin stopped at this place called the Stuffed Shirt Lounge, which was a bar just a few blocks from Jack's apartment. And before leaving the bar, Melvin asked for an empty bottle of Coke from the bartender, which is a really weird request. The bartender gives it to him, but it is this that prosecutors believe was used to bludgeon Jack over the head. Also, Candy never went to the ER like she said she did. Instead of going to the ER, she loaded up the kids in the car and drove around for 3.5 hours.
What?
Just like they're fucking
horrible.
Dad
Imagine
did.
The trauma. The trauma that these kids experienced.
God. Jesus.
Witnesses also testified that Candy had made phone calls calling around town trying to find someone willing to kill her husband for her. Just looking for takers.
Wow.
I mean, all signs. Granted, it's mostly circumstantial evidence, but all signs point to Mel and Candy. The New York Times dubbed it one of the most spectacular homicide trials ever. This is from the New York Times. The Mosler Powers trial was so lurid that the judge admitted no spectator under 21. The star performer was the legendary lawyer Percy Forman, who persuaded a jury to overlook clear motive, bloodstains, palm prints, fingerprints, and love letters. So the defense said that the bloody fingerprint found in the car could have been there for who knows how long. Melvin's definitely been in that car before. DNA evidence wasn't a thing yet, so all they knew that, hey, there's some blood in here, and yes, it matches Melvin's blood, but it could be his blood for all you know. You don't know whose blood that is. So just because his fingerprint's in it doesn't mean that it belongs to Jack. Candy took the stand and testified that on more than one occasion, she had come home to find Jack in the arms of strange men. So the defense attorney basically leaned heavily on the homophobia of the jury by saying that Jack was clearly some kind of deviant and it was his lifestyle that got him killed. And how dare they try to pin it on these good, upstanding, incestuous lovers. The jury deliberated for 16 hours before returning with a verdict of not guilty. They claimed that there was insufficient evidence to convict the couple of murder. The jury acknowledged the love affair, but they were like, incest does not murderers make, I guess. Candy reportedly kissed each juror after the verdict was read. Now, maybe it's just because we live in COVID times, but I would want her to keep her nephew kissing mouth away from me very much. Oh, like, thank you very, very much.
Far.
Like
very far.
I don't need that near me.
But I'm so sorry to you guys, but listen.
I hate this.
This is from the New York Times. The courtroom carnival ended with Mr. Powers and Mrs. Mosler kissing on the lips as they drove away in her gold Cadillac. Just oh in public. God. Like, imagine being her sister. Imagine. Imagine.
No.
Okay.
No.
So they went on to throw a lavish party celebrating their not guilty verdict, in which she had the children walk around with one of the murder trial posters that had been posted all around town, and had them sign it, had all the guests sign it as a souvenir, which Candy later framed in her house. She's a terrible person.
Fuck.
Candy did end up inheriting her husband's estate, his millions, and his banking business. She changed the name of the company to Candace Mosler Enterprises. Alas. The relationship was not made to last, and Candy and Melvin split a year after the end of the trial. Candy went on to remarry a much younger man named Barnett in 1971. However, the year after they married, Barnett mysteriously fell from the mansion balcony and suffered serious brain damage.
Oh, no.
Oh, my gosh.
Jesus.
While he was in a coma, Candy dipped out of that relationship.
Wow.
She's like, well, he didn't die, which is what I wanted. So he's in a coma, so I'm just going to quietly back out.
Oh, my God.
In 1976, Candy's body was found in a Miami hotel room. She was wearing nothing but a sexy silk nightgown and a full face of makeup. She had overdosed on her migraine medication. And because no one really knew how old she was, reports differ on her age at death. So some reports say she was 56, others say she was 62. We don't actually know for sure. At this point, Melvin was an eccentric and successful real estate developer worth about $200 million himself. He Jesus. Attended Candy's funeral with a hot young mystery blonde girlfriend in tow. He never married, and in 2010, he died in Houston at the age of 68 of undetermined causes.
Wow.
Wow.
So.
Wow.
And hopefully those children with all that money got inherited. The best therapist.
Yeah. I hope so.
That money could buy and inherited all of that and are living their fucking best lives now since their fucking childhood is one for the books.
Yikes. Good.
Woof.
Lord. Yeah, I couldn't really find anything about what happened to those kids, but just, I mean, I just hope that they, that things went okay for them. It's probably good that they stayed out of the spotlight after all that happened, but.
Wow.
I'd read their book, though.
For sure.
Wowie, wow. That was a great one. I had actually not heard that one before.
I'm so sorry.
So good. Oh my God.
Thank you.
I am shooketh.
That is what a nightmare.
Speechless.
How do you date that guy? Do you know what I mean? If he he's got the biggest lucky that Google didn't exist back then. Because that block, like,
well, even
no
if
way.
She knew, I mean, because she went to the funeral with him. So she had to, like, I'm sure it got back to her about that relationship. But here's the thing. He had $200 million. He actually, went down. He made the news in the 80s because he had, like, one of the largest yachts on the west in the Western Hemisphere. He, like, expanded his yacht. I'm sure Candy gave him a good portion of money to get his life started, get his businesses going for him to make that kind of money. But, yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
It's a hard story because it was just, like, there's no justice.
No.
You know?
Wow.
No. Wow.
Damn. That was crazy.
That was crazy.
It is crazy.
That's the craziest in love, actually.
Can we do a round of applause for the real MVP, that servant, though?
Okay.
Queen. A queen.
Yeah. Vacuum grass.
Although, Candy fired her and then badmouthed her all around town. So.
Oh, yeah.
That sucks, but.
Yeah.
She got fucked.
Well, wow. What are you guys watching this week?
Oh, man. I mean, outside of The Real Housewives of Atlanta, just Schitt's Creek, the new season. Oh, it has been my bright, shining spot. I am so cozy and comfy and happy that it is now on Netflix and available.
Yep. No, I actually haven't started the new season yet because Eric was behind. So we're finally like almost up to the new season.
It's so good. It's so cute.
It's just the best. It's one of my favorite shows for sure. I want an Ooh David bug.
An Ooh David what?
David? Mug.
Oh, mug. Oh, yeah.
I thought you said bug. I was
Me
like,
too.
What?
I was like, I don't get it. This must be a fly joke. I don't understand.
I have, well, you know, I've been watching that Married at First Sight, but the thing that I have been doing in my spare time has been to do Duolingo. So I'm brushing up on my old French words and
nice
vocab. So yeah, that's what I've been doing lately.
Nice. Hey, dude, 2020 is full of things like gardening, baking, learning a new language,
opportunities,
anything.
Yeah. What else am
exactly.
I going to do?
There we go. Well, hey, if you've got shows that we should watch, if you got crazy in love suggestions, and especially stories to tell, go to our one-stop shop of a website. It's myworstdatepodcast.com. And we love you guys so much.
Cheers.